Napoleon Hill was an American self-help author. He's best known for his book, Think and Grow Rich, which he published in 1937. Right now, it is still among the 10 best-selling self-help books of all time. He was kind of controversial as well, accused of fraud. Modern historians also doubt many of his claims, such as he met Andrew Carnegie, who knows, and that he was an attorney. Gizmodo has called him the most famous con man you've ever heard of. Nonetheless, his book has helped a lot of people. In a moment, a modern-day Napoleon Hill without the problems, James Whitaker joins us. His book is called Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy. And he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest tonight, James Whitaker, was born in Australia, currently resides in Los Angeles. After a very successful 10-year career in financial planning, where he ran a company with more than $2 billion under management, James began his own entrepreneurial journey. Today, he draws on his diverse experience to help other people reach their potential in all areas of their lives. He's kind of a modern-day Napoleon Hill. His book is called Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, How the World's Leading Entrepreneurs, Thought Leaders, and Cultural Icons Achieve Success. James, I'm looking forward to this. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, George.
And I know several Aussies, by the way. One is Fiona Horn. She's a good witch. And then Russell Crowe, the actor.
Oh, fantastic. So hopefully you have no problems with my accent then.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I love it. When did you finally make your way to the States?
So I moved over here in 2012. It had always been a dream of mine to come and study over here in the States. So I actually did an MBA that was 9 months in Boston and 3 months in Shanghai in China as part of a bit of an international program. And then I met an American woman. I came over here with an Australian woman, and then we had broken up, and I met an American woman. And now we have a child who was born in America, a beautiful 16-month-old daughter.
So I've been beautiful.
For the last 8 years, and we've been in L.A. for the last 7 of those years.
Super. It's tough times right now with COVID, but Australia's having a difficult time, too, with this, aren't they?
It's interesting. It's one big thing I wish people in America knew more about, because if you focused on the mainstream media outlets over here, it seems to be very much about how bad America has mishandled the whole COVID thing. But it's actually something that's been very, very difficult around the world. I've spoken to some friends of mine in Melbourne, and I mean, it's difficult to compare a country like Australia that is so isolated. We're surrounded by the most dangerous animals in the world. We've got the most dangerous animals on the world once you even make it to land. But I was chatting to some friends who are in a city called Melbourne, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and they were saying, you're only allowed to, that state of Victoria is having by far the highest number of cases in the country. And there, only one person's allowed to leave the house at a given time. If you're not an essential worker, you're not able to get a nanny or a babysitter to look after your kids. You're only allowed to leave, I think, for 1 hour out of the day. It's a really bizarre stance, considering that in the whole scheme of things, that the mortality rate is actually not significantly different year on year compared to everything that's going on. So I just wish Americans understood that there's a lot of things going on around the world. And I think it would be a very difficult time to be a policymaker or just a government leader in any country in the world during something as difficult as this.
Absolutely. And difficult for a lot of people, too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, we've seen that with the deaths. We've seen that with the uncertainty. My father's 80 and lives in Australia. He'd love to be over here. We'd love to be over there to see him. It's just something that I feel like everyone in the world has got to suck it up for a few months, and we'll wait and see. And I'm sure we'll emerge stronger on the other side.
I do, too, because it can't continue forever. The system won't allow that. So,
and I mean, we've seen some of the economic impacts and also some of the impacts of negativity and suicide rates, domestic violence, divorce, all of these things are beginning to outweigh, a lot of the real effects that COVID, when a lot of these statistics since day one have been, there's been a lot of controversy over how accurate these statistics are. So I think we really need to take an assessment of the whole picture and say, well, what's the plan, and is it really worth it to have people stuck inside? And in LA, I mean, we weren't able to go to the beach, which sunshine and exercise and getting in the ocean, I thought would be a great bit of therapy.
Why do you think Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, continues to be one of the best-selling books of all times for self-help?
Well, it gets results. I mean, since it was published in 1937, it was based on interviews with hundreds and hundreds of the most successful people, not of the time, but people who have become the most successful people in history. This is a book that's been given out in businesses. It's been given out to schools and prisons. And I want to clarify something here. 99% of the people who read Think and Grow Rich do nothing with it. It needs to be read at the time that you are ready to make change right in your life. And once you are ready, and another element of that is life experience. So I read Think and Grow Rich at the age of 15 for the first time. It didn't really do a great deal for me, but it was the book that transformed my father's life. So I was always aware of its power. But when I revisited it once I had a bit more life experience, and wow, I could see it start to open up. And people like Sharon Lecter, who wrote all the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books with Robert Kiyosaki that have sold more than 40 million copies. People like Rob Dyrdek and Bob Proctor and Barbara Corcoran, very, very, very successful entrepreneurs, read it every year or every few years because they have new life experience that they can bring to it. They don't notice something new in the book. They notice something new in themselves. And I think the more life experience that you have with any book that you're reading, it means that you can apply it in a unique way based on where you're at.
Andrew Carnegie, the industrialist, of course, died with about $380 billion of today's money in the bank, basically. He was probably one of the world's richest people. And did Napoleon Hill really meet him or not? Because there's some controversy about that.
There is a bit of controversy, and I think anyone who's just successful on such a grand scale is going to attract, you know, massive degrees of controversy. So this book, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, the brand new one that we've just released, actually contains excerpts from that original interview from 1908 between Napoleon Hill and Andrew Carnegie. So that interview, of course, is what spurned Think and Grow Rich, which has become the best-selling self-help book in history. It sold more than 120 million copies around the world. That was the inspiration for my book, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and was obviously very much the inspiration for Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, the brand new book that we've got, which actually includes the initial conversation, the interview between Napoleon Hill and Andrew Carnegie, as well as Hill's analysis up until the 1940s of that conversation. And I've gone in and updated it and annotated it to add in examples of modern day success icons and companies that are doing really well, just to give people more of an idea of things in a modern context. But I mean, these are timeless principles. They worked as well for everyone in the original Think and Grow Rich. They worked for Andrew Carnegie. They worked for everyone featured in Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy. And they worked for everyone featured in Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite.
And James, what are some of those principles?
Well, I think the biggest one for me is the power of the mastermind. So relationships have been by far the biggest asset that I have had. They have created every single opportunity that I have enjoyed, and I think they will create every opportunity I enjoy in the future. So the power of the mastermind says that you don't need to have all the answers yourself. It's by surrounding yourself with the right people who are like-minded with values but come from a diverse background yet aligned towards a common purpose, that's where you can make some really big things happen. And that was what Andrew Carnegie was so successful at. He wasn't focused on making money. He was focused on making people, and he had a very, very big vision. Now, we see people like Elon Musk today. He's not focused on making money. He's made a hell of a lot of it, but he's focused on this vision. So he gets people who work very, very hard on this shared vision. So things like the power of the mastermind are very, very important, and that was the ninth principle of the 1937 book, Think and Grow Rich. And in this new book, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, the first principle we talk about there is self-discipline, because we see everything that's going on. Everyone wants to change the world, but to change the world, you first need to change yourself. And the first step towards doing that is first having control over your own thoughts, because it's your thoughts that ultimately become your beliefs, which ultimately becomes your actions. So there's some of the things that we talk about in these books that have worked for everyone. It doesn't matter your financial starting point or what perceived misfortune you've had in the past.
How did they get these techniques? Was it trial and error? How did they pick them up?
I think history has shown that there's a lot of trial and error in everything that's gone on. So during this conversation, Andrew Carnegie challenged Napoleon Hill, who was a young reporter at the time. He was a young reporter from Wise County in Virginia and had made it to New York to have this interview with Andrew Carnegie, to interview him for a magazine story. And Carnegie said to him, basically asked him if he would dedicate years and years of his life if he introduced him to some of the most successful people who ever lived, people like Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell and Henry Ford, real titans of industry. And of course, Carnegie himself, who not only was, I think, the third wealthiest person in the history of the world, I think he's also the number one philanthropist. The money that he created, or that he gave away, has created more than 7,000 libraries. So what Napoleon Hill did after that was go and spend 20 years interviewing more than 500 of the most successful people of that time, who history now reveals were some of the most successful people who ever lived. And he packaged all of those lessons together into an achievement philosophy, because Andrew Carnegie was frustrated that a lot of the philosophers traditionally, it was a little bit airy-fairy what they were talking about. He wanted an achievement philosophy that would basically give you answers to every single situation that you would find yourself in, so you could achieve success as you defined it. And I mean, all the people that I've gone and interviewed firsthand as a result of this is, the proof is in the pudding, you know. It's the results that have happened, the transformations that have occurred as a result of the people who have read this book, and they have taken that purposeful action. And now, like Carnegie, they're focused on giving everything away. They're losing themselves in boldly being of service to other people, because another big theme of this book is that to find yourself, you need to lose yourself in the service of others.
Absolutely. Well, it's now, how many people do you think are, you know, if you look at 100 people, how many of them do you think are successful?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to think about what the metrics of success are. So I think basically if you have financial freedom, which a lot of people, there is a big misconception around being wealthy. A lot of people give it a little bit of a false connotation, thinking that it's something bad or that it should be used specifically for material purchases, but actually having more financial resources at your disposal actually enables you to contribute more to the causes that you care about. So a lot of people now, with this big push towards socialism, I'm not sure how serious it is, but it would essentially neutralize that entrepreneurial spirit, that it actually funds almost all of the nonprofit work and things that we need to help standards of living and help people who need it the most. So It's a hard question for me to answer, but I think ultimately it is up to the individual to define what metrics of success are for them. But I think being healthy, knowing what success looks like to you each day, and having positive relationships and doing work that you enjoy.
Napoleon Hill plays a large part of this book that you have, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. You know, because as you said, he went to just do a story on Carnegie. He ended up falling for him in terms of what he did.
He did, yes. So after Carnegie challenged him to give up so much of his life, but a big part of that was that he wasn't going to get paid a single dollar. And Napoleon Hill obviously recouped millions and millions of dollars on the back end, which can only happen once you sell a book that has done so well. And earlier you mentioned some of the business challenges and things that he had. It's important to remember that was a very, very difficult time for society. I mean, on the back of World War One and into the Great Depression,
and then
World War Two. Yeah, without the standards of living and technologies and things that we enjoy today. But they were able to form this very close bond, because Carnegie gave away 90% of his wealth right before he died, and the final 10% was given away shortly after he died. But his greatest gift that he wanted to give was to help people to help themselves. Now, in this world we're in, we're trying to basically give everyone a participation award. But what Carnegie and passed down to Hill, what they were trying to do was make strong people. So when they were confronted by adversity, when it inevitably strikes, because that's what it does, no one is immune from adversity. So how you respond to adversity when it inevitably strikes is what separates ordinary people from extraordinary achievers.
You gave Napoleon Hill author credit with you on this book.
Well, I thought that'd be nice, and I work closely with the Napoleon Hill
Foundation. He's going to want royalties somehow.
Well, they basically said to me, we've got this amazing conversation more than a century ago. We'd love you to come in and basically help us modernize this for younger generations to help them become successful and happy. And a big part of what we've tried to do with this project is basically talk about the misconception of Think and Grow Rich, that it's merely for monetary benefit. But what Carnegie and Hill were trying to do was create the world's biggest mastermind. And what I mean by that is different groups of society living in harmony and wanting to help each other and wanting to give without the expectation of anything in return. And I could not think of a better time than what we're in now for this book to be available.
Absolutely. And as you point out, rich doesn't necessarily mean money, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, how sad to be a billionaire sitting in a massive mansion by yourself because you've ostracized everyone and everything who's tried to help
you.
Right,
and they hate you or something like that.
Yeah, they hate you and you're poor in health because you haven't focused on your physical health. And it's about figuring out what does success look like for you. And a big part of the work that I do is focusing on helping people win the day. And you can't win the day each day if you don't know what success looks like. So waking up and thinking about what your intent is for each day is a really important part. I think it really is the foundation of being success, because it's those incremental gains. It's the consistency, like a compound interest graph, that over time leads to exponential gains down the track.
While I was driving to the studio today, James, there was a homeless man standing at the corner holding up a little sign saying, please help me. And, I just have to help these folks when I go by them. I mean, I just have to. And so I rolled down my window. I was at a red light, and I waved him over. And he didn't, he didn't have a shirt on. He had dirty shorts on, and I gave him some money. And you would think that God had visited him. And I mean, he was so thankful, and he's just saying, "Thank you, man. I love you. Thank you, thank you. God sent you to me." And then the light turned green, and off I went. But I helped him. But for him, This book of Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, or your other one, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, that was rich for him. He, the money I gave him made his week, and he was happy.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience with people where I actually travel with bottles of water in the car. So living here in Los Angeles, I think it's something like 70,000 people who are homeless, who are living here, which is such a sad
situation. Sleeping outside in tents or with blankets and things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, the path of throwing money at a problem is clearly not working. It's a bit like the war on drugs. I think at this point you need to rethink the strategy. And I think trying to give people an opportunity to help themselves, like teach them skills that they can use so they can go and make an income or provide some community. Of course, provide as much support and things as you can. But if you're only throwing money, and I'm not talking about you, I think obviously that's a lovely gesture and everyone should be as giving as they can. But I think helping people give them the recognition and awareness that their temporary situation is not going to last forever. If they can focus on getting the right help and figuring out what they want and have a bit of a helping hand, it reminds me of the quote about teaching a man to fish rather than giving him a fish, letting them know that there are people out there that care about them, who are willing to help them basically figure out what they want. Because a lot of these, it's easy to cross the road when we see a homeless person in front of us. And truth be told, there are parts of LA that are downright scary, where if you drive past or under an overpass where there's, my wife and I mentioned earlier, we had our first child about a year and a half ago. So you become very aware of conditions of footpaths when you're walking along it with a stroller. Or perhaps you're an older person in with a walking frame or in a wheelchair. There are some footpaths now that you just cannot go down. You have to physically go onto the road because of these homeless encampments, and something needs to be changed. And I would strongly urge the people in charge to focus more on what can we do to help these people help themselves.
Hold on for a second, James. We're at a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about your work, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and also Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. His website, James's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls next hour with James Whitaker as we talk about Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, and see how it applies to you. And welcome back to Coast, James Whitaker with us. James, Carnegie was 12 years old when he came here with his parents from Scotland. He was dirt cheap broke, but he turned himself into something. How did he do it?
He certainly did, yes, coming all the way over to the U.S. I mean, back in the day, I think any voyage would have been a very, very big challenge. But what happened to Carnegie is that he was shown kindness early on. He was given access to this library where he could go and read a bunch of different books on things that really unleashed his imagination. And that's what really created that spark where Carnegie promised himself that would pay it for, that he would pay it forward. If he ever found himself in a position of great wealth or in an opportunity to help others, that he would do all he could. So he also saw the dream when no one else did. He was able to think about what he was going to do and eventually became this amazing steel magnate. And it's really quite an incredible story that I think a lot of people could benefit from.
Yeah, the company that everybody will know, U.S. Steel, was basically Carnegie.
Huge, yes. The great steel magnate. It really is an amazing story that someone who's a penniless immigrant from Europe could come over here or from Scotland and able to make it big at such a difficult time. It certainly should give promise to all of us.
90% of his income and fortune he gave away too. That's what kind of philanthropist the guy was. 90%.
Yeah. It's huge, and it's actually what's inspired a lot of people. There's people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates today who are now greatly encouraged to give away parts of, you know, significant portions, if not all of their wealth, because there's something that's been a little bit lost, which is one of those misconceptions about Think and Grow Rich, which is a big part of Carnegie's legacy, as we were talking about before the break, is that what Carnegie was trying to do was a purpose far greater than himself. He wanted to give other people the ability to help themselves, and he knew that money was simply a vehicle to be able to do that through, for example, the 7,000 plus libraries that he funded as a result of the wealth that he had built. And I mean, just think about the legacy of creating 7,000 libraries around the world. And recently Warren Buffett said, if you're in the luckiest 1% of humanity, you owe it to the rest of humanity to think about the other 99%. And that's exactly what Carnegie thought as well. I haven't got a direct connection between Buffett and Carnegie, but that was a huge theme of Carnegie's work, was that he believed that people who were in a position of great fortune, whether they were born into it or whether they had worked into it, that they had an obligation to help those who were less fortunate than them.
Of the three lessons that are necessary to help attain everything you want in your life, do you need all three to work simultaneously?
They're really, really important. So the first one being self-discipline, which basically says that without control over thoughts, we can't control, we can't have control over deeds. We can't have control over our actions. So having that self-discipline to master our emotions rather than letting our emotions get the better of us, whether it's anger or fear or anything else. And the second one is learning from defeat. And the first part of that is reframing it to something positive and temporary. So we were talking about homeless people earlier. I actually had shared something recently. It was a quote from Chris Gardner, who was from the basis for the movie The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith.
Yeah.
And he said to himself, I might be homeless, but I'm not hopeless. So thinking about whatever situation you're in, whatever adversity you have faced, that there is a way for you to move forward. And often it's basically just a way of life testing how badly we want something. And in the book, there are people like Janine Shepherd, who was hit by a truck. I mean, she had qualified for the Olympic Games, and she was literally hit by a truck before she went to the Olympics. She spent 9 months in the spinal ward, was told that she would never walk again, was told that she'd never be able to have kids. And today she travels the world as a walking paraplegic. She's got more than a billion views online with her, you know, with all the different footage from her talks and things. So that learning from defeat is a really, really important piece. And then the final principle in this book is the golden rule applied, which of course says you should treat others the way that you want to be treated yourself, but also what you do to another, you do to yourself. So even if you think about perhaps cutting someone short or acting in some type of unscrupulous manner, thinking about what that does to your character over the long term will certainly make you rethink your actions in the present. And when you think about those three principles over time, I mean, that's what adds up to happiness and freedom and financial success and all the good things in life.
And how soon does that all happen for you? When does it start to click?
Well, it depends. There's actually a funny thing that happens when you follow this achievement philosophy, which is something that I have been. It's great to be in a position where my work is that I have to study these great conversations and I have to interview some of the most successful people who ever lived to unlock their secrets to success. But you reach a point in your life when you need to. You can stop chasing these opportunities because you begin attracting these opportunities to you. Now, this is only the result of taking years and years and years of purposeful action. But it goes right back to that consistency piece. I mean, you can have one good day or one bad day, but it's what you do over time. I mean, Think and Grow Rich might as well have been titled Think and Grow Poor. The results are, you know, essentially exactly the same. It just follows a different path. Think and Grow Rich is when you follow these positive thoughts and reinforce that with purposeful positive action, whereas Think and Grow Poor would manifest in poverty, ill health, and misery, not today, but over time. That's why it's so important to have a plan to win each day.
It's a difficult time period right now, James, as we talked about earlier, getting hit by COVID, the shutdowns and everything else, people laid off. How do you pick yourself up from that kind of adversity?
It's a really, really good question. So I think the first thing is really getting a grasp on awareness of exactly what's going on with this situation. So a big part of that is recognizing what is in your control and what's out of your control. A lot of people, their day-to-day mood and productivity is 100% dependent on someone who's sitting in the White House or an article they read. And I mean, what a horrible way, or what they see on the news. And I mean, what a horrible way to
go through life.
Yeah, when your mood is so dependent.
Today was draining. Watching the news today was absolutely draining.
Yeah, and it's part of, I feel like it's easy to feel drained just from the current climate that we're in. So anything that does, well, first of all, recognizing what is in your control and letting go of what's outside of your control, and also thinking about what do you want? Like it's a question that some people who I know who are very successful, but they feel like they're treading water. They haven't asked themselves in a long, long time, what is it that they truly want? So having that awareness of where you want to go, and once you've got that, enables you to create a plan. So the next part of that is the action. What are you going to do as a result? Are you going to sit there and feel sorry for yourself? That's fine. I mean, there's a lot of things in the world that are going against you, but if you really can have that courage and summon that courage and think about what you want to achieve, once you have that destination in mind, it's so much easier to reverse engineer that. So starting with that destination, where do I want to be in 10 years and then 5 years and 3 years and 1 year? And then you backtrack that to where do I want to be in 90 days and 30 days? And finally, you know exactly what work you need to do today and how it relates to your long-term mission. You already know how the story ends because you've written it. You're the hero of your story. All you need to do is worry about the work you need to do today. So putting one foot in front of the other instead of trying to run an entire marathon when you simply don't have the energy for it.
If it doesn't work for somebody, what are they doing wrong?
Who they're surrounding themselves with is a really big factor. So if you feel like you can't live with authenticity or you feel like you don't have a voice, then you're flat out just hanging around the wrong people. I mean, anyone who's negative in my life has been cut a long, long time ago. Now, I'm not talking about watching sporting events. The American football season's about to kick off, and I've just joined a couple of fantasy football leagues, so I know there's going to be large degrees of banter there and some harrowing moments supporting my team, watching them on TV. But having that negativity day to day is a horrible way to live. So I would be thinking about what negative sources have you got in your life and thinking about what people are you surrounding yourself with, because sometimes removing a negative influence can be just as powerful as gaining a positive one. And there are so many other things that you can do to think positive. I mean, another question I would ask you is, if a stranger walked into the areas where you spent the most time, which might be your office or probably your home office at the moment, if someone looked at the areas where you spent the most time without you being there, they just looked at that environment, what would they say about you? What would they say about you? So making sure you don't have you know, bunches of paper and clutter and whole heaps of junk food and things like that, because how we feel physiologically, a big part of this is exercise. It's our mental health. It's our physical health. It's making sure we look after ourselves first.
Do you think people who have gone through incredible strife, enormous situations that have happened to them, end up being better off than most people? Can they pull themselves out of it?
Yeah, they do, because what they learn through that adversity makes them tougher people. It makes them stronger people. So some of the people who were featured in Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, we got people like Jim Stovall, who at the age of 18, his dream was to play for the Dallas Cowboys, but at the age of 18, he was told by the doctors that he would go totally and permanently blind, and there was nothing they could do about it. And I can't imagine what that would be like at the age of 18, to have your whole world literally fade to black. And of course, after some very difficult years coming to terms with that, where he was given a white cane and confined to a small room in his house where he would be safe, eventually he said, enough is enough. And he actually went on and created a television network called the Narrative Television Network that provides, TV, like television and movie programming for blind and visually impaired people, because that didn't exist previously. And that's now available in more than a dozen countries around the world. And he was also the author of 30 best-selling books, despite being blind. And he hadn't written a single book before he was blind. So now with the speeches and things and through my podcast, when I have people tell me that they can't do something, I just direct them to stories of people like Jim Stovall and Janine Shepherd, who was the aspiring Olympian we spoke about earlier. These are just great examples that you can achieve whatever you set your mind to if you have the right plan.
Did Napoleon Hill hit it big because of his discussions with Andrew Carnegie? What got him successful?
He did, but he had a lot of challenges as well. Like there's a book, I forget what it's called, but it's very much a biography that was released by the Napoleon Hill Foundation, which is a no-holds-barred insight into the challenges that he had. So one of the things that was with Napoleon Hill was when he actually ended up buying himself a Rolls Royce, and he sort of fell into the trap of these material purchases.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, he reached a point where he'd overextended himself. And then when things like the Great Depression hit, I mean, you're in a difficult time then. He had some challenging business partnerships. He had a fire that took out, I believe it was his apartment or a house. So he had a whole bunch of different challenges. But by the time he died, he had accumulated a substantial amount of wealth. And I've had conversations and seen it firsthand through Napoleon Hill's relatives, people like J.B. Hill, who's a physician alive today, who's a great person. Just really great people who want to carry on the legacy.
That's amazing. Amazing. And were there other people like Napoleon Hill and Andrew Carnegie in that time period?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. Dale Carnegie, who bears no, I think Dale Carnegie, possibly even if memory serves me correctly, I might be wrong on this, but I believe he actually, his last name Carnegie is not his real name. So to the best of my knowledge, he's not affiliated with Andrew Carnegie in any way. But his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, I mean, that is an absolute classic book. It's a timeless classic, like Think and Grow Rich. So that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, was released within 1 year of Think and Grow Rich. So I think it was actually a really good time for the self-help industry. It really is. Or Napoleon Hill in particular is very much regarded as the godfather of the personal development industry and inspired a whole bunch of different people, one of them being Jim Rohn, who was actually the person that I discovered and worked my way back to Napoleon Hill, because Jim Rohn was such a big inspiration for me in Australia.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, he was born, Dale Carnegie was born on a little farm in Missouri.
Oh, interesting.
And he hit it big. And like you said, his work continues to go on and on. We're going to take calls with James Whitaker next hour. So if you got questions about his work, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, jump on board or tell us one of your stories of how things have happened for you. You can also use this just, to better your health and things like that, can't you?
Absolutely. I mean, the stories of people that we've got featured in these two books, I mean, there are so many amazing stories that people can just learn a whole bunch from. So Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy is really a collection of short stories, but it references everyone from, there's people who I interviewed firsthand, like Barbara Corcoran, who when she was in her early 20s, her boyfriend and business partner left her for her secretary. So she realized that she had to make a lot of changes in her, life. But at times like that, it would be easy for people to go through life with an increasing chip on their shoulder. But Barbara Corcoran went and created the Corcoran Group property company, which she sold for more than $60 million. And people will know Barbara from Shark Tank on television. It's a great show for entrepreneurs. And we've got a whole bunch of different people and lessons to really help people take ownership of their financial, physical, and mental health.
Tell us one of the stories, James, that either one of the two books, that just something you will never forget, a success story.
Yeah, there are so many amazing stories in these books. Someone who I think is fantastic is Jessica Cox. So Jessica Cox is a woman who was born without arms, but basically she was told by her parents that they didn't see any handicap or any misfortune or any disadvantage with her. And having that mindset forged at such a young age meant that she was able to get out of her comfort zone at a very young age, and she ended up becoming recognized by Guinness as Guinness World Records as the world's first armless pilot. Now, I get that it would be very, very difficult for people to be in a plane with someone who doesn't have arms. She's not officially a commercial pilot, but her story is such an incredible tale. I mean, she can scuba dive, she can put contact lenses in, she can drive a car. She can surf. She can do all these amazing things a lot. And she's a Taekwondo black belt and I believe even a state champion without arms. I mean, these are all practical examples, proven examples that you can do anything that you set your mind to.
That's fantastic indeed. Give out your website, if you would, James.
Yes, it's jameswhitt.com, JameswHitt.com.
Super. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take an hour of phone calls, share your stories with us, or just questions. Two remarkable books, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and his latest one that just came out, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. And both books are available at Amazon and all over the place. Don't forget to follow us along in YouTube. Just put Coast to Coast AM Official up there in the YouTube search bar and follow us along. And like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter as well.